March the 7th, 1995, and we're going to talk about what he remembers about Ridge Street. And one of the first things we want to know is when you first lived there and the addresses, etc. Please.
Okay. Lynn, the house on Ridge Street was, as you cross the bridge to go out on Ridge Street, it was the first house on the right. And it was sold to the city of Charlottesville around 1953 or 54 to build the fire house there. It was situated on 1 acre of land, and of course the railroad, Cielo Railroad, was right beside it, and there was a driveway going down between the house and the railway, but plenty of big trees, oak trees, and lots of grass to cut, and a big garden in the back, two cherry trees, a pear tree, a strawberry patch, some raspberries, and lots of grapes. So that's what I grew up with. The house, my grandfather moved to Charlottesville and built the house in 1888. My father was born in the house in 1889. And he was...
We'll play the tapes back so you'll be able to hear.
Okay.
And you can borrow the tapes too.
When my grandfather moved here, he had been born in Rockridge County in 1842 and was in Jackson's Brigade in the Civil War and survived 5 years of that, which is amazing. But he was in prison for part of the time. Horse fell on him and he broke his leg. He came home for a year, but overall he had 5 years apparently in the Confederate Army. So he opened a store on Main Street, a general store, and ran that store for a long time. He was on the school board. His name was James F. Fulton Harlan. And my father then was as I said, born in 1889 and actually born in the house. He was in World War I with the 29th Infantry Division. And my grandfather lived until 1924, so he was about 82, 83 years old when he died. Not bad in the days of no antibiotics. The store, then my father did not run the store, and it was rebuilt and was Sears Roebuck on Main Street. You remember that name? Sears downtown.
Downtown? No, I don't remember it being downtown. I remember when it was up on West Main.
Yeah, for the first 20 years it was downtown, and that was the store. It was built in 1937 for Sears. And
where was it on Main Street? Down at the other end?
At the Vinegar Hill Inn.
Oh, I don't remember that. Well, that might have been before I came.
Yeah, okay. It was, it became Leggett's. Part of the store beside it was Leggett's. And then when Sears moved up on West Main Street, they took over the whole building. It was Leggett's. And in fact, my brother and sister and I just sold it, you know, to Lee Danielson.
Was really the son
to
that Lee Danielson. Listen, I just hope he can come up with all this money.
He's already come up with a lot of it, you know, so he has.
Where does he get it? It's not his.
No, it isn't all his, but he's got other people in with him, I think, to make a difference. So, anyway, that's the brief history of the store and the house. And remembering the house, of course, I remember a lot of things about it.
Now, first, let me interrupt just a minute. You said you were telling us about all the trees and everything.
Yeah.
And you said you were brought up there, but did you go there when you were first born? Was this a family all lived together?
Right. No, my mother and father lived there. They got married in 1925, in January of 1925. And my mother was a nurse. She finished a nursing school at the university in 1916, and my aunt was also a nurse and lived there. And so I was raised by both my mother and father and my aunt, who lived there with us.
Yeah, because your grandfather had died just before you were born.
My father didn't get married until after he died. He and my aunt were took care of me. So, yes, I was born at University Hospital. Did you ever listen to my talk on the history of the hospital?
No. Oh, I'd love to see that.
Oh, it runs about an
hour. I'd love to see that.
But I was born there, so I just show one page of my medical record. Then my brother was actually born at home. I think my brother just went to labor too fast, so he was born and so I had that house, which he thought was rare, but I pointed out to him that in 1940, one half of the babies born in Virginia were born at home. One half. That's a fact. That's hard to believe.
Were then the two women and your father and mother and you two boys, right?
My sister.
Oh, when was she born?
She's her birthday is July 1st and she's 5 and a half years younger. So,
but was she born at the hospital or at
home? Hospital, yeah. They got up there in time for her.
Yeah. Okay.
So that, for school, it was walk to school in those days, and I don't remember in my 11 years of school missing but one day for snow reasons. Not bad. But everybody walked. And it was McGuffey Elementary School.
Right.
And then in September of 1939, I started high school in the old Midway building. And one of the things that I remember about that is people yelling extra war, because you remember World War II started on September 1st. And with radio and television, not like they are today, the newspaper put out extras, the Daily Progress and others. And so then for 1 year I went to the old Midway school, and then the new Lane High School, now County Office Building, opened in September of 1940. So I graduated from high school in 1943.
Because people just went to high school 3 years at that time.
Well, four of us is no eighth grade.
No eighth grade, that's right. It was just one.
They started the eighth grade a year after I had started high school. So both my brother and sister had the eighth grade, but I didn't. So I finished, I was 17 years old, and I went to the University of Virginia. They were on the accelerated program. This was in July of 1943.
I was there then.
You were?
I was a graduate student.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. We might have passed
probably.
Each other.
Probably. You know, we had to wear hats. Remember?
Yeah.
It was a coat and tie school, and you wore a hat if you were first-year student.
Right.
I rode my bicycle lots of times, and I just parked it right outside of the Alderman Library, never locked it, never worried about anything.
Oh, I know. Leave your coat and your books and all, anything, any place.
So, by November, I'd finished one semester, and by the 1st of March, I'd finished 1 year at the university, and then I went on. 9th of March, almost 51 years ago. Now, what is it? It was not 51 years, 9th of this month. It was the day I went in.
March the 9th, 1943? 44. 44. That's right.
So I had 1 year at the university before going in. Well, let me go back to the house a little bit and tell you what I remember about it. We had a sidewalk, which was great for riding bicycles in the early days. That ran all the way to the block and on the Did you interview Beverly Hart?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
How about
Marjorie Hicks?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
She was there Sunday. You didn't come.
No, I couldn't get there Sunday.
Yeah, but Marjorie was
Marjorie
there
was
with
there.
Her husband.
Yeah. Yeah, Jerome and I were in the same class in high school.
Oh.
Well, you know, I can remember we were able to
We played a lot of sports, and we could play football, touch football in the yard, tackle field. There were hedges to cut, grass to cut, weeds to rake. And the old push lawnmower, when you get older, when I got older. And I did a lot of running. I remember that we had a lot of hedges over there. You could run over hedges for about four houses up. It's like doing high hurdles in college. Yeah, it was fun doing that, and I did like to run in those days.
Who lived next door to you?
Jay Brown was on a media right, and he ran a little store over in Belmont. That house also was taken down to make way for the fires. So the city bought two houses.
Do you remember his first name?
I don't remember his first name. I remember his daughter, Neely Gray, but I don't remember his first name.
Well, that's okay.
But they got back to see the city. Across the street was Jack Fowler, who is Commissioner of Revenue. And to On beside him was Miss Edna Bailey, Miss Bailey, you know. Yeah. And then the Stalkins lived in the next house. On that side. Then on back on the side we were on, the next house was O.E. Hawkins, Hawkins Brothers store, and his wife. They had no children, and Maddie Thomason, who was her sister. Although they didn't have any children, they quite a few of them, nieces and nephews, actually lived there while they attended the University of Virginia. And my father and mother and aunt also had a cousin who lived in Lockbridge County, who went to the engineering school at the University of Virginia and lived with us for 4 years. They paid for his college education back in the 30s, early 30s. In fact, they said it was a real debate about it, since he was going up to the university every day, whether I should go on and stop there instead of stopping in first grade, because I'd go up with him.
You would have made it, John.
I'm sure.
You would have made it.
Anyway, I never really thought about going anywhere else. I was so interested in Virginia and the athletics, particularly the football. I started going to football games. They say I went to a football game with my uncle who died in 1928-29. He took me to my first football game. Of course, I don't remember anything like that. But my aunt and father were big sports fans. Greasy Neal was a good friend of my father's who was coaching at Virginia. And so I got started very early, and my brother and I would go to the Virginia games, football games, in the late 30s, by ourselves. We'd just go up there,
pay 50
cents, and go
too.
In. Absolutely.
Perfectly safe.
We'd go in, and the crowd was always small. And that's where there were many people being there. The other sport that we were really interested in was boxing.
Ooh.
Boxing was the big wintertime sport in Virginia, instead of basketball in those days. And Memorial Gym would be filled by 7 and the fights would start at 8. Well, Buddy and I would go up there at 6 o'clock when they opened the doors. We'd go in, go up on the track in the balcony there in Memorial Gym, sit on the floor right above the ring, and on the track there and watch the boxing matches. And the first year that I did that was 1936, because they had the national tournament here in 1936 and 38. We went to those. I wish I'd saved some programs from those days. It'd be interesting to have them. So with that kind of interest in athletics in Virginia, it wasn't any surprise, I guess, that I went to UVA. The surprise probably was that after going to MCV that I came back in and stayed, because I really didn't plan to do that. But then after my administrative residency, they offered me a job. And so one thing led to another, and 39 and a half years later, I left. But let me go back to the house a little bit.
Yeah, I'll have
I've got a couple pictures, but the house itself, you went out, there was a porch on the front that ran all the way across the front. And then the entryway, you went in, you had a hallway and a stairway going upstairs. And to the right, immediately on the inside, was a, what we called a parlor. That's when you had company. They used the parlor. The next room was the living room. And then and back in the far end of that hall was a big coat rack, and there was a phone on the wall. Now, this is early, before we had lots of phones. One telephone, and that was downstairs and on the wall back there. And then beyond the living room was the dining room. And we used the dining room all the time. And then the kitchen. And the kitchen was interesting because in the kitchen we had a coal stove. And beside the coal stove was a hot water tank. And so actually running the coal stove every morning actually heated the hot water that was used the rest of the day without any problem. And we had a maid. I was actually raised by Sinee Payne.
How do you spell
Sinee? S-I-N-I-E. Sinee Payne. B-A-Y-N-E. And she was there the whole time. So you can say I was my aunt, my mother, and then a full-time maid. Now, she lived rent-free on a house at the back of the lot there, which opens up on, what is that street? It's not Dyke Street. But anyway, the street is that, behind
that,
Ridge.
Is that Oak?
I'm not sure.
I was on that street the other night.
So we owned the lot all the way through there. She would start the fire in the morning and make biscuits every morning. Now that's interesting too, because being beside the railroad during the Depression, it wasn't unusual to count as many as 60 hobos on a train, on a freight car. And there were lots of trains that went by. I love steam engines. We had the three passenger trains going each way, and numerous freight trains. And then the freight trains during the Depression with the hobos on them. And so it wasn't unusual for them to stop by and have and ask for something to eat. We had a lot of that going on, and we always had plenty of biscuits that we made them every morning. Plenty of jelly, making all kinds of jelly. I don't think I ever had any bought jelly until I was in the circus, making the truth. Not everything was made at home with all the food you had around there. Didn't seem to me like the birds bothered the cherry trees much in those days. They were big cherry trees. They had a lot of cherries on them. But anyway, it was a kind of a nice place to grow up. There were plenty of kids to play with. And what I did, particularly when I was in high school, I organized. We didn't have a little league in those days. So we organized teams by streets, and so I organized the Ridge Street team. And we would play games against prize friends. Belmont, Locust Avenue, various parts of town. You know, we'd have teams, and there would be people designated to sort of head up. I'd get on the phone, call all my players, and get there, and we're going to play Saturday morning. And, you know, it was, you had more leadership with the young kids, I think, than you have today, because you got adults running Little League today, whereas I did it in those days.
Did you play against any black children, or were black children on your team ever?
No, they weren't. They weren't. Nor do I remember we played against. But they were, of course, around us a lot. Another thing that I did, I made a little soapbox derby racer. And it wasn't fancy. All I needed was a big board, 2x4s, and I'd go down to Corner's junkyard. I've got an old steering wheel, wrapped rope around the steering wheel, and it went to the 2x4 wheels on the front, so you could turn it either way. And Garrett Street was pretty steep, you know. Right across there, it's closed.
Yeah, yeah.
But I take that race over down Garrett Street, right down the hill on it, with the steering wheel. It wasn't a fast race, but it was kind of fun. It's something you can make yourself. That made it nice.
I remember learning to ride a bicycle at a fairly early age, and yet probably wasn't all that early when you think about it. I don't know how old I was, but I probably was probably second or third grade. We didn't have training wheels in those days. You had to get on that bicycle and learn how to drive, ride it. One of the things that we did in the 30s, we would go to the Lafayette Theater on Saturday morning.
I remember that theater well.
And see the cowboy show. And so, you know, and we all had our guns on. We had cap pistols and we strapped holsters down. And we pretended to shoot at each other after going to that movie. And I really, you know, in Germany, Hitler had the Hitler Youth.
Yeah.
And they had formal training. But we had cowboy shows on Saturday, and we just pretended all the time shooting at each other. So we went through, I think, the American soldier had an amateur type of training program that was equal to, at least equal to the people I've talked to in Germany who were there as kids, to any of their formal programs that were run by.
And you all weren't being mean either.
No.
This was just play acting.
Now you did. We shot you.
Can you imagine having those laser things now that you can actually
tell? Oh my
tell?
Gosh!
It's unbelievable. The electronics. So. Mm-hmm. But we did. That was sort of the usual Saturday. It cost 10 cents to go to the movie, and maybe you could buy a little cup of ice cream for a nickel. They didn't have popcorn and things as much, I don't think. I don't remember that anyway. I didn't have enough money to get it. But one of the things you could do in elementary school that I did is carry newspapers. And I could carry the Daily Progress or the News Leader in the afternoon and make a fair amount of money. The Progress was 15 cents a week. And the carrier got a nickel, and it was 6 days you had to carry the afternoon paper. It was not published on Sunday. So we would then go around and collect people. And the route that I carried was the university route, which was up on Berkeley Road.
Oh, so then how did you get up there? Ride your bike?
Bicycle. Yeah. Oh, yeah, always bicycle. Yeah. Carry the paper, even in the rain. I remember one time it was raining hard. And I came down Rugby Road and turned to go down by the rotunda, and my bicycle hit the streetcar track. You know, they were not that more.
I remember them too.
Ripped off on that thing and slammed into the wall.
Oh my gosh. Didn't hurt,
but it was just a matter of, you know, you really have to be careful on rainy days on these streetcar tracks.
Right. But they still had the streetcars when you were growing up.
No, yeah, I know the streetcars.
Yeah. Because they were gone when I came, but the tracks were still there. I came in 1942.
They may have pulled those tracks up and used them for metal for the war. I'm not sure.
I can't remember when they took them out of the university area.
They may have paid those.
Yeah.
Were you in the education school?
No, I was in the graduate school.
Okay.
I was just telling Dee in Latin and Greek.
Oh, okay. One thing I liked about going up to the University Library, and I used it when I was in high school, is they had nice translations up there when I was taking Virgil.
Right. Oh, yeah. I know about those translations.
Yeah, we call them poems.
Yeah. Let's see. To get back to Ridge Street a little bit, can you remember? Well, you told what the... How about church? Where did you all go
First
to church?
First Methodist. So it was another, just a walk in there, Sunday school and church at First Methodist Church.
Did you go to both Sunday school and church?
We went a lot, I would say. We maybe didn't go every Sunday, but we would go to both.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday school first and then go on church with the parents. We had very good Sunday school teachers. I remember that. It was something I really enjoyed. Another thing that this was a little bit later, but in 1940, my aunt took my brother and me up to New Haven to see Virginia play Yale.
Oh my gosh.
I had the program. And Virginia won that game 19-14. We were probably the only, my brother-in-law, my future brother-in-law was at the game too. we were probably not very many people in Charlottesville, but this was a planned trip. We went to New Haven, and then we came down to New York and went to the 1940 World's Fair.
Oh, I went to that because I lived in Philadelphia at that time.
We went to a baseball game. We went to, we saw all the sites in New York City. Went to, in addition to going to the fair, we spent a week in New York, and then the next Saturday we went on down to College Park and saw Virginia play Maryland. So you can see what sort of a football fan I was in 1940, doing that, and my aunt was too. And then came on home. So we actually went to school for a week, but it was a nice educational thing. I don't know whether people frown on that today or not, taking that for a week.
Anyway,
we could do that.
But they frown on everything nowadays, no matter what you do.
You know, my father was also on the school board, and my grandfather was on the school board, and then later I was on the city school board. So we had a three-generation thing on the city school board. But it was interesting, I'll just comment on that a little bit. I remember when I was on the school board, my secretary was Judy Lynch, and she called me, and she said, I've got Mrs. So-and-so coming to see you. She wanted an appointment with you. And I said, well, check and see if she's ever been a patient here. She said, I haven't been a patient here. I said, well, I don't know what she wants. It turned out that day after day, people came to see me with school problems at work, you know.
My God.
And so it was personnel. It was the same kind of stuff that I was doing at work. Sometimes the board meetings would last past midnight. After 3 years, I've had it. It was no change of pace. It was just terrible, sir. And it's worse today. I know that. They get paid today. Maybe some of them fight it, but I know. I said, when everybody else has said, serve 3 years on school board, I'll be willing to serve three more. But I also felt that it wasn't as easy to be on a school board when you have children in school.
Right.
You can be much more objective if you don't have kids in school. Those are the reasons that I decided after 3 years not to seek reappointment. But I always did a lot of things in the way of civic affairs. I was in the JCs after I started, you know, in my job at the university, and then I was president of the local JC chapter, and then was part of the charter forming of the Thomas Jefferson Lions Club and president of that. One of the things that I felt was very important was to have my assistants in civic clubs. I think that that helps if you spread out in the community, because so many times people connected with university just don't know what's going on in the community and don't do anything in the community.
And some of them have never been downtown.
Never. That's
which
right.
Just, it's really astounding to me.
I had my own 22 rifle when I was 13 years old.
Oh, now that's interesting to me.
I know that didn't happen today. Of course, I had a BB gun. I had a Red Ryder BB gun before that.
At a 22 rifle at age 13.
It was a single shot 22 that cost $5. Let's see what it was. And I would go hunting. I'd go squirrel hunting with that. Now that's a real shot. Go squirrel hunting with a single shot 22.
Where did you go squirrel hunting?
Well, we'd have to go out in the country with friends.
Oh, so you were out in the country.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't shoot in the city.
We didn't shoot in the city. I don't ever remember shooting that gun. I don't think my daughter would let me do that. We had to go away. I did shoot BB guns. Although we would walk. We would walk for little ways in the other county.
That's right. Because you would
walk up into the street.
Yeah. And that wasn't that far to go, was it, to get to the end of town? About where did Ridge Street end there?
It ended,
think of
if you look at it now,
Yeah.
It's a little ways along where that Fifth Street extension is, but not too far.
Yeah.
Maybe about a third of the way there before you get to the next one. Once you get on Fifth Street, no. And I was out that way probably in 1939. It was the spring of 39, maybe a mile from home. And we were swinging on a rope swing. I slipped, fell, broke my left arm and elbow. And when I got up, you know, I got this arm was swinging back. That's
oh
what
my
the break
God.
Was.
Oh my God.
So it was in, I think it was in April, early April, when I just made a swing of with my coat and walked home. And
then went up to,
then went up to Charlie Frankel, Bob Funston. Funston was the chairman. I think Charlie Frankel took care of me then. I used to kid him about it. They x-rayed it and set it, and then he set it up like this, because he was in the elbow, and I had it on for 6 weeks. And then when you took the cast off, I couldn't get my arm any straighter than this. So I had to go through a lot of physical therapy and
oh my God.
Wait on the bar. And you may not notice it now, but the reason I'm not a good golfer, I tell people, because I can't get this arm any straighter than that.
Yeah.
To keep me from being conservative.
Yeah.
Nobody ever noticed. Now, we had a straight concrete sidewalk that went right into the front door, and then a concrete walk around to a side porch. It was we referred to it as a cellar, a basement, but it basically just had a coal furnace in it. And it was not under the whole house, but it was under enough room in there to have the furnace that heated the radiators in the house. You went into a porch to go into the front of the house, which ran the whole length of the house. And then as you entered the entryway, there was a hallway and the steps immediately on your left going upstairs. Immediately to your right after you entered was a living room that we call the parlor, which had the antique furniture in it, and it was just for company. And then the next room was a living room, and that had a big radio in it. Because radio was, of course, what we all listened to. The programs of during the war, Amos and Andy, and so forth. The Washington Redskins on Sunday. It was, in fact, 1941, Sunday of 1941, when Japan, the word that Japan had bombed Pearl Harbor, interrupted what we always had was a meal at the middle of the day on Sunday and listened to the Redskins on the radio. Sometimes with that big radio and my interest in baseball, I would try to get a New York station, which occasionally you could get, and I would listen to the Brooklyn Dodgers or one of the New York teams. I started keeping the old times and in addition to the Richmond paper and Taylor Crosby. So I would always be interested in the sports section. And one of the things that I did, I would look at the New York Times batting averages of my favorite baseball players. And then I'd keep up with it during the week. And no calculators yet to do long division. But I know that I, of course, had never had any problem with percentages. I mean, I know what percentages are, and when I coach Little League, I would make sure that my kids kept their own batting averages so the boys would never worry about what a percentage was anymore.
Good idea.
And so it's sort of fun as they keep their own batting averages. But then beyond the living room, there was a dining room, which had a big dining room, too. We had company a lot. Particularly at Sunday, we'd always have company when it seemed like. And my mother exposed us to a lot of different meats. I mean, you know, I liked everything. We had, in those days, we had veal, which I don't think was that expensive, both veal cutlets and veal roast. She felt that it was important to, from the standpoint of the iron to have liver, and I loved it. And I mean, liver was a treat that she would give us at breakfast once a week, usually on Sunday morning, maybe Saturday. But one slice of veal liver. which was 15 cents a pound. I remember some of these things.
I think you may have been the only child in the United States who liked liver.
I probably was. But my brother and sister and I all love liver. I like veal liver, you know, and it's expensive. It's like almost $7 a pound over the job. Pretty good. You know? And occasionally I get it, but chicken livers I love, and it's a lot easier to just eat chicken livers. So I do eat liver for illegal sources, cholesterol, and I like liver. So I'm exposed to pork, veal, liver, roast, steak. Oh, we just, it was a very, she would charge, she had plenty of
turkeys.
I remember, and chicken, and turkey. But chicken, we had cousins staying up with us, more or less our age, boys, two boys. And so we were sitting there, they were spending a week with us in the summer. And Hal wasn't eating. And my mother said, "Why aren't you eating, Hal?" And he said, "I'm waiting for the white meat." Well, you know, we weren't allowed to just have white meat. We had to rotate. I mean, we liked white meat and dark meat. In fact, I prefer the leg today, much prefer the leg to the breast, as far as that's concerned. But that's the way we were raised, you know. And she said, "Well, when you're up here, you're going to have to eat dark meat." That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, anyway. So then, and then the kitchen had a coal stove and our maid, and she lived on the property, and so she would start that up every morning, make biscuits, hot biscuits in the morning. She made a lot of other good things too, like crackling bread. Oh, I wish I had the recipe for that. Outstanding crackling bread. A million calories, but outstanding. And the hot water tank beside that, which was heated by using that. Then we had a gas stove in the kitchen, and the gas stove was used to cook the evening meal, and it had an oven in it too. And the interesting thing about the gas stove was that in order to run the stove, and you put quarters in when you ran out of gas. Did you get that?
No, I didn't.
There was a little thing in there that when the gas would run low, then you just put another quarter in, and so that's the way you got your gas for the gas stove.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And so then they'd come along and pick up the quarters periodically. We used to get a lot of buttermilk, and Judge Michael's aunt delivered buttermilk to us every week.
Was she a
two
farmer?
Two and a half gallons. They lived down, evidently, she lived down in near Prophet down in that area.
Oh.
And she drove in and brought buttermilk. And of course, we used a lot of buttermilk making biscuits and things like that.
And drank it, too.
Yeah. I never really cared that much for drinking it.
I love buttermilk.
But I do like buttermilk dressing, so I probably wouldn't mind drinking it now either.
Yeah.
You
now, know? This was in addition to the regular milk. You said you had milk for it.
Yes, the regular delivery from Monticello Dairy we had. But in addition to that, we got buttermilk. Miss Michael had brought that buttermilk.
The Monticello.
Now, I'm sure the Monticello Dairy probably had it. You know, they had, it was delivered in bottles, and it wasn't homogenized, so the cream was at the top. I know that in Richmond, there was a dairy down there that had a sort of a neck, and then it spread out again, and so then they had a little plastic thing you could put down in it and get your cream off of it. Do you remember that?
No.
But they did have that in Richmond, but not in Charlottesville. Charlottesville was just a straight flour. Pepsi was my favorite drink, or a big drink, a big grape. 12-ounce Pepsi cost a nickel. If you seemed like you were getting more than you did when you got an 8-ounce Coke in the bottle.
Right.
I like the Pepsi Cola. The other thing I remember is walk over across near Midway, and there was a bakery over there, and they had these pastries that were round and filled with cream.
Cream horns.
Yeah, cream horns.
One of my favorites.
They didn't cost much either, but I mean, one of those things.
Was that in Vinegar Hill, the bakery?
Right down. A Smith family.
Were they black?
No, they were white. And they lived up near Venable Street, in that general area.
Mm-hmm. Well, go on about the house, the porch.
So then there was a screen porch in the back. And we had two cherry trees, a large grape arbor, a strawberry and thatch and raspberry bushes and a pear tree. And although we didn't have peaches, so we worked with peaches, my mother, my aunt canned peaches and made peach pickle every time. So we were exposed to a lot of fruit and made a lot of desserts. And in fact, they made some wine, too. I remember we had homemade wine. Father made some of that during the Depression. It wasn't illegal. Well, there was one cute story. I remember my father telling me one time that he was out buying some moonshine. Saw one of the policemen in town the next day. He said, "We saw you last night. What did you saw?" He said, "We saw you out there buying some moonshine." He said, "Yeah, we saw you." He said, "We knew you, and we didn't want to get you involved in this, but we raided that place right after you brought it to us."
Oh, dear.
The upstairs then had had four bedrooms. And as I said, my aunt Emma lived there, and she was working as a nurse at the university. And my mother did not continue nursing after he was born. She was a homemaker after that. So she did the evening and Sunday cooking. And so that we had one bathroom at the end of the hall back there. There was an attic in the house, and the front half of the house had three or four rooms in it.
You didn't tell me about the attic.
No, I didn't mention that. We enjoyed going up there and started playing when we were kids.
And you said there was this open sleeping porch that you mentioned.
And we had a sleeping porch, which again was taken down when I was very young. I know that it was sort of, it was the kind of thing that a lot of families had in those days, with lots of windows, so it was the air conditioning you hoped in the summertime. And I don't know what I mentioned, Buddy and I playing with Dave Reese a lot.
Yeah,
that may not be on tape either, but I remember David and Nancy and my mother and father had this big sleeping porch on the back of their house, and they would sleep out there in the summertime too with four beds. They all had their rooms otherwise, but when it was so hot, that's the place they would go. And that house is still there too. You know, it's a little, it's a nursery thing.
For a daycare center.
Yes.
Is that the Barrett Daycare Center?
Minnie Ford Barrett Daycare Center is a house that in police.
Now mention about the roller skates, because that
was the big thing in addition to riding bicycle was roller skates. Of course, they were the plant on roller skates. And I went through a lot of bicycle wheels, that is, tires, wore a lot of wheels on roller skates. And we would skate all over town, particularly going up to the university to skate through the gym, around the lawn, and that area. And then I also talked a little bit, I think, about carrying the daily progress. And the road I had was up on Rugby Road. And the progress was nice to carry because everybody took it, and you didn't have that far to go. I carried a substitute carry of the newsleader on occasion, but then as many people take the newsleader, so you'd have to have a much wider territory to get that. But the daily progress in the 30s, when I was carrying it, was 15 cents a week. And if you had 50 people you were carrying it for, you made a good little amount of money for those days, because I got a nickel a week, and the progress got 10 cents a week. I guess the only problem you had occasionally was making sure people were at home to pay that 15 cents. We would also pick up scrap metal and take it, if we could find it, take it down to Corner's junkyard, which wasn't too far away either. And then I'd also use them a lot to buy things when I was making the soapbox ready racing. The upstairs and up in the attic, that finishes the house. This side porch, let me go back to the ice. We had an ice box in a little area off the side porch, a little room there. And we put up a card for the delivery of Elliot Ice. And the card was, whichever number was up on top, was the number of pounds they think, either 175, 50, or 25. And I don't remember the exact year, but we got an electric refrigerator when they first started coming out. somewhere around in the middle 30s, I remember.
Yeah, he said 1935 or 36.
I think that's right. We do it at the right time, but the relationship.
Well, I think that's probably it. That's what, this is what we needed to know.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to show you a couple of pictures.
Oh, yes. I'll just see the pictures.
Now, here's the house. There's the